Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
It is on. Rafael Nadal will face Roger Federer for the first time at Wimbledon for 11 years, and they are nearly old enough to get their bus passes, and yet they are going to be sharing centre court once again on Friday because they have both won through their quarterfinals today. Roger Federer in four against Kei Nishikori, Sam Querrey in three. No, Rafael Nadal in three against Sam Querrey. That scared you, didn't it, Nadal fans?
No one believed you, David.
Make sure everyone's paying attention.
Yes, well, there you go. So
it is on, Querrey versus Federer.
Yeah, bring it. And then we've got Novak Djokovic against Roberto Bautista Agut, who is going to have his stag do on centre court with his six mates who are supposed to be going out to Ibiza. In fact, they went to Ibiza and they've come back and he's flown them in and he's going to get the beers in and they're going to be there watching him and cheering him on and barracking Djokovic. All this stuff's going to happen on Friday. We're going to tell you all about what happened today in the company of Catherine Whittaker. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, David.
And Matt Roberts.
Hello.
Hello. And a very special guest for the first time here on the Tennis Podcast from The Telegraph. We have Molly McElwee. Hello, Molly.
Hiya.
You're right.
Yeah, very good.
What do you think of Wimbledon so far?
It's my second Wimbledon, so I mean, I'm enjoying it a lot more this time because I can actually find everything a lot easier.
Oh, can you show me? I get lost a lot around here.
So I'm actually getting onto court on time, which is really great.
Excellent. So we've all been monitoring what's been going on today. Catherine, upon sitting down, you seemed a little underwhelmed by the day's play that we've witnessed today. I was a little more upbeat
about
it.
You were overwhelmed. I don't think anyone was overwhelmed.
No.
Does anyone want to declare themselves overwhelmed by what they saw today?
Can you be whelmed?
Is that a thing?
I think David is whelmed.
Okay.
I'm a little bit underwhelmed.
I think possibly my
underwhelmment is attributable to the loss of Sarandi, because actually the men's singles results perhaps were about par, barring a disappointing 2.5 sets from David Goffin, of which we will speak more in due course. I think the rest was about par, but the result out on court two, sorry for the bias, but I think bias is allowed in mixed doubles, isn't it? And I think the reason I'm biased is because that partnership, and Matt and I went and watched their match on centre court last night, made me feel like a teenage tennis fan again. It made me feel just electrified, like, just this is something so exciting and so beyond tennis. So I'm sad that fairy tale has died.
It was like waking up from a dream today, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It had been so nice and so lovely, and then it all just crumbled on court two, like so many other dreams at Wimbledon this year.
I was in a great mood until this podcast started. I sat down, Catherine's got me a beer.
David was whelmed until about 2.5 minutes ago.
To be fair, I was as well, just because I got to see Roger for the first time on court. But
oh yeah,
I'm not going to... That was just me fangirling, because I agree that tennis wasn't what it could have been. But
I think we're all perhaps guilty of... overlooking the, or perhaps being a bit fatigued about the star power and the Roger Federer factor. And, you know, we're aware that all these people flock from miles around, and, you know, the whole David Foster Wallace, Roger Federer as religious experience thing. But as somebody who experienced it for the first time today, is it all of those things that we've all talked about for the last 15 years 20 years years
it was pretty surreal to watch that backhand just play out. I'm a big Federer fan, so for me I was like, I don't care what's happening, what the scoreline says, I just want to watch him play. And it was kind of, yeah, just being a fan for the day was really fun.
It's one of those things, isn't it, because I think people because he's been around for so long, people have a view of what an experience of watching him will be like, and it is quite mind-blowing to because you see somebody like him, and in fact Nadal as well, I think to a large degree, and Serena Williams, these people that have been just in our consciousness for so long, they've been part of everybody's lives for so long, and if you've never seen them before close up, I remember when I saw Pete Sampras for the first time 24 years ago, and he'd always been my hero before I got into tennis, and it was quite something when I saw him in the flesh for the first time.
Who have you had that moment, Matt?
Well, the first time I ever saw Federer was the first time I came to Wimbledon, 2006, and I saw him practicing first, and I was very short, and I got my way to the front, and he was practicing with Tony Roach, who was his coach at the time, Then I first saw him play at Wimbledon a few years later against Ivo Karlovic in the quarterfinals, and I remember thinking I just wanted to see a forehand winner up the line and a come on, and he did it in about 0.2, and yes. I was satisfied from that moment onwards.
I remember commentating on that match, and nobody had gotten near Karlovic's serve all week for obvious reasons, serving down from 6'11", and in the first game, Federer broke him. Nobody had. And this was, quarterfinals, something like that?
Yeah, it was the quarterfinals.
And
yeah.
and Federer just dipped a couple of backhand returns at his feet and then passed him down the line. And, yeah, it was crikey. Poor old Ivo.
Was it come-oning or was it come-yetzing?
I remember distinctly it was a come-on. I think he's developed the come-yets in the sort of latter part of his career, I think.
He did a few of them today, didn't he?
He wasn't come-oning in the first set because Kei Nishikori came out, and in the words of Pat Cash, who was with us on Five Live, he just came out and redlined it and went for everything. I was really pleased about that. I was really pleased to see Nishikori at least say, you know what, I'm not going to just play my normal game and let this guy dominate me. I'm going to take it to him. And he won the first set 6-4.
But would you allow me again, this might be a recurring theme, to be a downer on it all?
Oh, here we go. Go on.
But that's the problem, isn't it? Everybody comes out and feels like they have to redline it to have a chance. And that is unsustainable. That therein lies the problem.
Or is that a problem, or is that just a realization of what we're witnessing right now with these three guys?
Yeah, and the three guys are amazing, and I am absolutely pumped for Federer and Nadal on Friday. Absolutely pumped, as pumped as anyone. It's going to be brilliant. I can't envisage a world in which that will be a disappointment. However, I would exchange it for four great quarterfinals.
Would you?
Really?
Wow. So you'd rather have an even playing field of maybe 15 players that are all pretty good, or you would
not
rather
an
have...
an even playing field. Look, I want to see greatness, but I would exchange it for sort of, over the course of the third, fourth and quarterfinal rounds, a series of great, great matches.
Rather than witnessing the careers of the three greatest male players of all time at the same time going head-to-head.
I've seen a lot of that.
I think the dream is both, right? You want to see them tested, and
you're
then
just greedy,
and
Roberts.
Then you want. But I feel like we have had that. I feel like But in the last year and a half, we haven't had that.
And that's the wrong direction of travel.
Mm. How would you go with Molly?
I wouldn't exchange much for Nadal Federer at Wimbledon, but I think watching some of the rounds this week and at the end of last week, it has been sort of fatiguing, just like, oh, well, that's going to happen. They're definitely going through. And even today when Kay took that first set, I wasn't convinced that he was going to keep that up at all. And it proved it when Federer broke back immediately, or broke him immediately in the second set. So
It felt so familiar, didn't it? I mean, look, I loved as much as you did watching Nishikori do what he did in that first set. I thought, this is brilliant, this is the way. But I could also see in his eyes, or maybe I was imagining it because it is such a familiar tale, could see in the, you know, opponent's past eyes of the last 15 years, the belief that this is Nishikori playing, or in his mind, I'm playing at 100% here. I'm absolutely pushing myself to the limit, and this is unsustainable.
It does also point to the belief that Federer has in his own game, the fact that he just didn't panic when he went down a set. You could see him stay calm. And I actually thought In the very first game, Nishikori nailed two clean backhand winners, and I thought that would scare a lot of players. But Federer knows that they were good serves from him, and he would back himself to hit those spots on his serve, and he kept going to Nishikori's backhand on the serve, and it paid dividends later in the match as Nishikori started missing a lot. And it just shows that kind of stubbornness can be a negative, but Federer turns it into a positive because he has such belief in his game that he knows that eventually he's going to find his spots and Nishikori won't be able to live with him.
And he also knows that Nishikori knows that he can't keep it up. That mentality, that dynamic, and we saw it played out with Djokovic and Goffin as well, and a little bit with Nadal and Querrey, because Querrey put up a really good fight in that first set. Those three know, and Murray pre-hip knew as well, okay, you're playing really well, mate, you can't keep this up.
Yeah.
And we all know that as well.
And I think Roger Federer wasn't at his top game in the first set, and he knew. He was like, well, he's playing really well, but I'm also not playing my best. I just need to step it up.
Well, I mean, there were two things that really struck me. Being, I mean, where we are in the Five Live commentary box, we're court level, which is an incredible experience. You're basically on the corner of the court, just overlooking the left shoulder of the corner line judge. Mm-hmm. And two things struck me. One is, from a Federer perspective, in about the first point of the second set, Nishikori, maybe the second point, he hit a serve out wide onto the Federer backhand and he missed it. And it was 125 miles an hour and he missed it by an inch. And Federer put an arm out wide and middled this backhand flick return cross court. It didn't count because the serve was out, but he could not have hit it more perfectly, more crisply cross court for a clean winner. And Alistair Eakin and myself in the commentary box, we just looked at each other. We weren't on air. We just looked at each other and said, oh, my. I can't remember seeing a better struck backhand single-handed return than that in my life. And things are going to change now. It just immediately made us feel like that. And Federer won the next four points and he broke to love. And every single one of them was finished with a winner. He took it to Nishikori and it was as if he'd put like a turbo boost on his game. With one press of a finger, he decided, okay, I played within myself in the first set. Now you're having it, Kay.
And is that the problem with the longevity of these guys at the top of the game? That we have seen it all before. We've seen all these patterns before. We've seen the plucky underdog wins first set and then right at the start of the second set, the enter name of big three hits an inspired shot and suddenly the match turns. We have seen that situation over and over and over again, and it feels like
they've got scar tissue, those guys. They've got imposter syndrome.
It's impossible to overcome it now.
You saw that in Nishikori's eyes out there, and I reeled off the other names like Grigor Dimitrov and Miloš Raonic.
Memory of Grigor Dimitrov.
These are all 29 years of age. You know, they're all good players. I mean, Cilic less so because he did win a slam and he did beat Federer.
But now he is walking scar tissue.
Yeah, he is, but it doesn't matter with him. It does for the others because they're not going to win one, right? And you saw Nishikori there trying his heart out and Roger Federer and Nadal and Djokovic just owning these guys. And it's incredible to witness these world-class players who have imposter syndrome out there in the company of these guys.
As I've said, I'm pumped for the semi-finals and the final, but I'm also ready to get to a tournament where Tsitsipas hasn't been knocked out, because that's what this tournament needs. A youngster...
Plenty of time for that, though.
New blood that doesn't have that scar tissue and does believe. Yeah. That's what's been missing. That's the missing ingredient in the mix for me, a Tsitsipas.
What you were saying, David, about Federer sort of turbo charging his game, that is actually something I do remember from the very first time I watched Federer live, is actually how much power he does have in his game. I don't think it's always noticeable on the TV, but today he's in that second set, as much as anything, he overpowered Nishikori.
Plus, he hit everything flat.
Yeah.
Particularly on the backhand side. He's just doing this swing and this stab, and he's middling it, and he's not bothering to go over the top of it.
For what it's worth, my parents were here on Monday, and they've seen a lot of live tennis, courtesy of me and David over the years. They've been very lucky, and they were incredibly struck by how flat the balls were being hit. And the three matches that they saw, and what did they see? Monday they saw Konta, they saw Federer, and they saw Nadal, and they were really, really struck by how flat the hitting was and how small the clearance over the net was.
Including by Nadal.
I mean, obviously it was greater than for the others, but relative to Nadal standards, that's what they were struck by.
I'd say what you were saying, Matt, about Federer hitting the ball with such power, it doesn't translate to the TV as much. And everyone is so in awe of him when they watch him on television, but it just goes to another level. And you could see he just sort of turbo boosted that power in the second set.
Even when you see him in real time, you see the speed of the shots, but you don't see the effort the way you do with the other guys. You don't see this explosive movement. What you said, there was a moment where Alistair Eakin described a backhand passing shot, and he said, oh, he's just caressed that, right? Because that's the motion that you saw on the backhand side. And yet Pat Cash and Marion Bartoli both said, no, he's hit that incredibly hard. But he'd actually done both.
Yeah.
His timing was such that it just looked like this sort of wave of the arm, and yet you looked at the ball off the strings and it exploded off the strings.
And the same with his movement. Sometimes in long 4 or 5 set matches, ones that sometimes he's ended up losing in the last year or so, people have talked about people with greater perceptive skills and knowledge than I have said, you know, this is going to be a challenge physically for Federer. And I've thought, well, he's barely moved, has he? Because he barely looks like he's putting any physical effort in. I mean, I'm sure if he was wearing a Fitbit, it would show that he's running all over the shop. But I'm just sort of thinking, he's barely done anything.
It used to wind you up, didn't it?
Yeah, he used to wind me right up.
We had many a row over that.
Yeah.
Thankfully in the past.
Yeah. On the earlier, well, it would have been last week, on the Wimbledon social media channels reminded us that it was the 10-year to the day anniversary of the Federer-Roddick final of 2009, 16-14 in the fifth to Federer. And I was at a family barbecue that day, a Wimbledon final family barbecue. Oh, you're my people, Molly. My brother recalled all too vividly just how stroppy I was that day, that he was supporting Federer. He described on a WhatsApp group that David is also in, much to my horror, he described me stomping up the stairs shouting, "He doesn't need it, Matt!" Although I would like to footnote that with my brother's pointing out that actually he says I'm on the right side of history, because
if my brother
could change the past, he would go back and give that Wimbledon to Andy Roddick. Aww.
That's nice.
Poor old Andy.
I mean, yeah, that was heartbreaking.
Roddick deserved a Wimbledon.
Did anybody here start supporting Federer in that match and end up supporting Roddick a bit?
I feel like everyone was supporting Roddick at the end of it, because you're just kind of like, maybe
Matthew
not
Whittaker wasn't.
Not but you're kind of him on there, because he'd gone so far. It's like, how can he lose now?
I remember genuinely feeling like you've got to be made of cold, hard stone not to be supporting Andy Roddick now.
And actually,
I couldn't understand how my flesh and blood was not.
Have you ever watched a match like that
the same as I
and
was?
Wondered whether even Federer is slightly thinking, you know what?
Yeah.
He kind of deserves it more than me.
Honestly,
he needs it more than me.
Honestly, I remember being angry at Federer, thinking, why don't you want him to win?
Because I remember I was watching, I related my watching at 4 a.m. of Goran Ivanišević against Pat Rafter. And a few years back, I saw Pat Rafter and I said, I bet you were happy for him though, weren't you? You know, because Goran's great, isn't he? Everybody loves Goran. I bet you were quite happy. And he goes, mate, do you understand? He was not having that. I felt terrible.
And that's the most mild-mannered guy.
It's got to be the stupidest thing I've ever said to a tennis player.
But I could imagine saying that.
And I've said a few
as well.
But anyway,
I guess that's why we're not professional.
Probably not
athletes who are made of stone.
proud to be not made of cold, hard stone.
Yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. So let's just get through the rest of the tennis results today. That's Federer's beaten Nishikori. And as you said, Catherine, Sam Querrey put up a decent fight in that first set against Nadal. I didn't see any of that. Matt, did you catch any of that at all? What was the sense? Was Nadal subpar? Was it just Querrey?
No, they were both playing really well in that first set. As much as you can judge these things on ratio of winners to unforced errors, they were both had really good ratios. Querrey was doing what he needed to, bringing his big game, serving a load of aces, but Nadal still managed to break him twice in the set.
And actually, it gets back to that conversation of last night, doesn't it? Where I was saying, that's what he needs to do, and Catherine's saying, no, he needs to do something else.
But Sam Querrey playing his best, which, to his credit, he really did.
I just don't think you can
do
anything
else. It is not enough.
Yeah.
He was going out there hoping that Nadal fell over.
Yeah. Mm.
But
shows how great they are, doesn't it?
Yeah, it
really
does.
And I think if he'd done something else, he probably would have been beaten more heavily, to be honest.
Maybe,
because his plan B isn't anywhere near as effective as someone like a Kyrgios who's got, you know, sort of trick shots and can get in Nadal's head, get in Nadal's kitchen.
Trick shotting.
No.
Go on, Sam.
Can you even picture it?
I reckon he's got moves. I've seen him dancing, you know. I reckon he could do trick shots.
Why didn't he? Today was the day, Sam. If he had them, they were coming out today. I don't believe he has them.
The underarm serve maybe would have gotten Nadal.
Why is everyone doing it? Why?
Someone should have done it.
Everybody should be shoving in one, at least, shouldn't they? Federer, come on now.
Just for us to enjoy.
We were underwhelmed with Kei Nishikori's lack of underarm serves the last few days. Novak Djokovic was struggling a bit early on against David Goffin, who was playing well. And I had Goffin winning a set today. And failed.
Everyone else probably did it 4-3.
Yeah, and he was a breakup. I put that in the newsletter predictions, which you can get on the newsletter mailing list, folks, and get our daily predictions. Most of them are rubbish, but still funny to watch
really
them.
Perked up for me.
Yeah, all right. Well, I've brought that up. So it didn't happen. 4-3, David Goffin leading, and Djokovic showing some real signs of discomfort out there, and lots of chat in the commentary box. Annabelle Croft was in our 5 Live commentary box and said that he looked almost a bit spaced out, and we've seen that before, haven't we? We've seen it in that match against Andy Murray at the Australian Open, and he almost looks a bit lightheaded and as though he can't really focus on things. He's had issues in the past with contact lenses, and you know, people were trying to work out what's going on with Novak Djokovic, and some people get wound up by it. Some people say, oh, you know, he's putting it on. He'll be fine in a minute. And sure enough, he was fine in a minute. I can only speculate. I haven't actually looked at his press conference transcript. Maybe you have, Matt. But I sense with him, and I've seen it with Andy Murray in the past, that those two players in particular, they don't have this poker face. They don't have this ability to just not let on what they're feeling. And if they feel stressed, if they feel nervous, if they're having a little bit of a panic, for whatever reason, they can't hide it. Whereas I think Federer and Nadal can. I think that is the main difference. And I think that manifests itself in their body language and then eventually something good happens for them, they calm down, and they're all right again.
Yeah, Federer and Nadal have lulled us into thinking that they're the norm, and yeah, there is absolutely nothing normal about their disposition on court at all. Again, I haven't read the press conference transcript. I haven't seen anything reported on social media sort of flagging any specific issue. I think he was stressed.
What do you think,
As you would be. He had everything to lose today, you know.
And I think he was rocked by how well David Goffin started the match. He was playing beautifully, David Goffin. He was taking the ball early, redirecting it, kind of bullying Djokovic, to be honest, in the first seven games. But it was like he poked the bear, because Djokovic at 4-3 then just knuckled down and did not miss for about an hour. And in that hour, he won 10 games in a row.
It's a bit irritating, isn't it?
And actually, Goffin gave some really good quotes afterwards, kind of describing the experience of playing Djokovic. And he said, you do feel like you have to play the perfect point to beat him. And even while you're playing the perfect point, Djokovic is still putting it back on your toes. Mm. And it feels like playing a wall, he said. And it's quite interesting for that to come from a player who's just played him, because that's all the things that we say about Djokovic watching him. And to hear Goffin say that is sort of proof that it is that hard.
There were a number of points where David Goffin was matching him. You know, it was lovely, lovely rallies. Goffin's matching him. And you could see him just panic and going, no, none of the things I've tried have been winners. He keeps getting them back, so I'm going to hit the panic button and go for a weird drop shot now. Mm. And how often do we see that against Djokovic? Ill-advised drop shots. Yeah. That's what he evokes from opponents.
Mm. It was weird though. I wasn't really watching it, but I had it on my screen when we were in the press room, and I was sort of surrounded by all my Telegraph colleagues, and we sort of all looked up, and someone said, "Oh, look, Djokovic is a breakdown. This is weird." And then looked down, looked up again, and it was over, and it was kind of, he got back. So I sort of missed that little panic that he had, but interesting, and gives a little hope to
Roberto.
Yeah, to Roberto.
Who has beaten him twice this year, 2 out of 2.
Yeah, at the start of the year in Qatar, and then again in Miami. But both matches, I mean, Djokovic at the start of the year, he's not quite himself. I remember he had that loss to Karlovic there a couple of years ago. And then in Miami, there was a big rain delay during that match. Djokovic won the first set 6-1 really easily, but there was a big rain delay.
It was a bizarre match.
It was a strange match. But Bautista Agut does have something in his game that Djokovic doesn't like.
And Robbie B.A. He is... Yeah. And it's my new rap name for him. Robbie B.A. is...
If you're radio commentating on Roberto Bautista Agut, you need nicknames.
I very nearly said that today and then bottled it. So I thought I'd save it for the podcast, try and build up.
But did it get the reception you were hoping for?
This is the creator of Sarandi. You're in the presence of Molly.
So you created Sarandi then? Because I'm more of a Marina fan, I'm not going to lie to you.
As is Serena. But maybe since the adoption of Marina, it's all gone downhill.
I'm quite happy to disown it now. It's fine. Robbie B.A., based on his performance in Doha, lots of shaking of heads going on here. He was awesome in that match against Djokovic. He's just got to find a way to bring it on Friday, hasn't he?
He's got a sort of, you know, when I was watching, in particular, the Nishikori and Goffin stands against Federer and Djokovic, respectively, I was thinking about Alison Risk yesterday taking on Serena Williams. And look, her tennis wasn't quite good enough to beat the greatest of all time yesterday. But I wasn't worried about her having a mental letdown or her thinking, oh my gosh, I'm having to redline this, I can't keep it up. I just wasn't concerned about that for her at all yesterday. I thought her tennis might not be good enough, but this match is going to be decided by the tennis and not by mental fortitude. Mm. And I sort of feel a little bit the same about Roberto Bautista Agut. I think almost certainly Djokovic's tennis is going to overwhelm him on Friday. But I think he might get a set. But I think overall, Djokovic will almost certainly win. But I do back him to be relentless and give you everything that he's got.
Yeah,
absolutely. And yeah, he won't be overawed by the occasion at all, because he plays the same tennis pretty much on every court, every match. He just has that one way, that one approach, that relentlessness. And Djokovic mentioned that as he was asked, what is the hardest thing about playing Bautista Agut? And he just said, the consistency. You think you've got him, but you haven't, because he can keep going the whole match.
Did he recognise the irony in saying that?
Exactly. That's his biggest strength. Yeah.
Describe him.
Yeah. Exactly.
So we know tomorrow we've got Mary Carrillo here on the Tennis Podcast, unless something awful happens and timings don't work or something. But anyway, we've got a booking, we've got an arrangement. So we'll use that to preview the men's singles semi-finals.
However, that means you don't have to do predictions.
No, it doesn't mean that, you see, because what we don't have tomorrow is Molly McElwee. So we're going to get Molly's predictions and preview for the men's singles semi-finals for Friday, and also we're going to just get your predictions as well for Alina Svitolina and Simona Halep and Serena Williams against Barbora Strytsova. What do you think is going to happen?
What should I go for first then? Women's?
Yeah, go for
okay.
that.
Okay. So I'd say I back Serena because I feel like her confidence has just grown so much over the fortnight. You can watching her press conference yesterday, she just seemed so sort of at ease, like, I'm here now, I feel confident, I feel good, I feel fit. And I just don't see how that can be matched. But equally, I think Strytsova, I get caught every time I say that.
Everyone gets caught.
There are certainly varying versions of that, even in our own commentary box, during matches. But anyway, we'll go with Strytsova, that's fine.
Yeah, but what I mean, watching her, she's sort of playing without fear. And I mean, you can see how that can work really well against Serena watching Risk. She was just so... She was really going for it and didn't, like you said, didn't seem overwhelmed by the occasion either. So I don't think it would be straight sets, but I still back Serena.
Okay,
there's a bit of Vinci in Strytsova, don't you think? That sort of,
she is now the oldest first time Grand. I'm doing a Matt Roberts. She's the oldest first-time Grand Slam singles semi-finalist, and she's overtaken Roberta Vinci for that record, yes.
Wow.
Oldest first time.
That's a great start.
She's 33 years of age. I'm telling you, 33 is peak age.
But
I'm only 12 years past.
I said that last year, and Isner won his first Masters at 32. 32's peak age, guys.
Come on, Rog, keep going till you're 45.
I think what's interesting is how going out of the mixed doubles might affect Serena. I mean, I'm not sure it will have a big impact, but I did think the mixed doubles was definitely helping. A, the game, and B, keeping her loose, keeping her happy and upbeat. And every time she steps on court in a singles match, especially latter stage of a slam, Serena is chasing history now, and that pressure cauldron is there. And if it does get tight tomorrow, well...
Yeah, I mean, that's one of your theories, isn't it, Catherine, that you feel that the mixed doubles is making her play better, i.e. it would be good for her to still be in it for her singles hopes?
In my mind, without question, without a test sample, it's impossible to know.
No, but that's but how you feel about it.
Absolutely. I mean, she's coming here without any matches. I mean, just watching her on court in the mixed doubles, which we won't get to see again this week, possibly ever.
Bruno Suarez was in town. Him and Nicole. Is it Melichar? Melichar?
Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolute party poopers.
Yeah.
Really was just, yeah. I mean, ugh.
What was the feeling on court number two? Because I wasn't
really
there.
Really grim,
you
Molly.
Did all yeah, because really I mean, I saw the second set on in the press room, and you could see the crowd was just so into it, and I was just like, when I saw the result, it must have been such an anticlimax.
It was just a total... Especially after they won that second set, because suddenly the crowd were like, yeah, we're on now. And then suddenly it's 4-love in the decider, and it all feels... I mean, they were the top seeds. They're a... It's a great advert for, actually, the contrary of what we were discussing yesterday and previous to that, of the best doubles player. The best doubles players are the best singles players plus anybody else, because quite rarely in mixed doubles these days, those two are a very well-worn partnership. They've played together a lot, and that was really evident today. And I thought, actually, that's what made the difference, the understanding between them, because obviously... Shot for shot, Murray and Serena are the better duo. But it was that understanding and the doubles now between them that made the difference. And I'm sure they take quite a lot of pride in that, actually, that it was kind of a victory for doublesism. Sure.
Serena Williams has never lost a set against Barbara Strutova, 6 out of 6. Although I remember watching their match in the Australian Open 2 years ago, and it was really good, really entertaining. 7-5, 6-4 to Serena Williams. But Strutova really just chucked everything she'd got, the whole box of tricks. She was trying all she could think of.
She's still on for the double.
She is. She's still in the doubles. So who knows?
With Su Wei Shea. If you like tennis, try and watch Strutova and Shea in the doubles, because it's just fun.
It's the top four seeds are all in the women's doubles semi-finals, which is the first time for a decade that's happened.
Who are they, quickly?
Oh, now
that's
you're putting me on
cruel,
the spot.
David.
I'll give you a minute to work it out.
Champion stat.
Right, Elina Svitolina against Simona Halep is the other singles semi-final. Molly?
I'm going Simona Halep.
Okay.
I know Svitolina has a better record.
Yeah, 4-3 head-to-head.
4-3, yeah. But hearing Simona Halep say the words, "I love grass," that's convinced me. I feel like...
John McEnroe's walking past again, laughing at us and pointing. And somebody's come out to accost him and wants a little pat on the back with him. And he's got his hat on and he's got his sunglasses on. At least I haven't got hit today. But anyway...
You weren't in range.
No. So, yes... I know what you mean. That was quite a moment, wasn't it?
Yeah, and she sort of laughed and joked about it, which she doesn't seem at all like stressed about pressure, which she's seen before, which we've seen her before. But then I think we'll be close, but I'm still backing her to make the final.
Yeah.
Molly's seen my predictions.
Oh, yeah, you got Serena again. Oh, against Simona Halep.
When did you make that prediction?
Pre-tournament.
Pre-tournament.
Can you not see that smug face?
Absolute shot in the dark that has come up trumps.
Sickening.
Were you rooting against Conta then? Because Conta...
No rooting.
Doesn't do rooting. No. Total pro.
Apparently in the mixed doubles I do rooting. Sorry, Bruno and Nicole.
But the Halep-Svitolina rivalry has been an interesting one.
Oh, yeah.
Because of that French Open match that sort of lives in people's mind. And also that match they played earlier this year in Doha. Do you remember the quote Halep gave afterwards? Something like, I promise myself I'd never give up against her again, she said, didn't she?
Well, just to run you through this, the match that Matt refers to in 2017, the Roland Garros, that Simona Halep won from 6-3, 5-1 down, and she won through 3-6, 7-6, 6 love. That I don't think Svitolina got over that for a while. Mm. And then they played each other three more times. And I reckon Svitolina must have gone, I am never losing to Simona Halep again. And she then won the next six sets, 6-1, 6-1, 6-3, 6-4, 6-love, 6-4, right? Svitolina did. And then Halep has got completely put out by that, as you said, and she promised herself internally, I'm never losing to Svitolina again, or I'm never going to give up, because she admitted in at least two of those matches she gave up.
Yeah.
And I commentated on that match in Doha between Halep and Svitolina. I would say that is the best match I've seen all year. Men's and women's singles. It was extraordinary. Mm. The quality, the drama, the toe-to-toe elements of it all. And you forget matches. But now that you've just brought that up, I remember how I was sitting, I think, with Joe Jury commentating that, and we felt like we could just go out on the town for the night and go and have a good old pint down the pub and just talk about this match for the rest of the week. It was so fun.
Well, that's it. As much as... sometimes it's difficult to remember the actual sort of points of a match, but you can remember how you felt during a match, and that was the kind of one that just made you think these two are playing outstanding tennis. And I remember your Twitter feed on that day, Dave. It was a stream of this is the best thing I've ever seen.
It's quite busy.
David was more than whelmed.
Yes, I was. So Molly, you're going to Simona Halep.
Yeah.
In how many sets?
Three.
Okay. Now, men's semi-finals, Roberto Bautista good against Novak Djokovic?
I mean, after this entire conversation...
She's looking at me as
I don't think I could bet against Djokovic.
Okay, right. Federer against Nadal?
after seeing the last, seeing them in, over this week and last week, I'd say Nadal.
Okay, who's going to win the final? Nadal against Djokovic?
Oh, God.
Don't make me say it.
This is a blooding Molly.
We might not get Molly tomorrow or the next day, so now's the time.
I want to say Nadal, but I'm going to say Djokovic.
Okay. So Djokovic is the champion in the men's singles, according to Molly. And is it going to be Serena 24 or not? Or is Simona Halep going to get in the way?
This is intense. For doubles prediction in a minute, Molly.
Yeah. You better know who the top four seeds in the women's doubles are.
Charlie Eccleshare said something earlier where he said if it's Simona Halep against Serena Williams, if Halep can do what Kerber did last year, then she'll definitely win. She just needs to do exactly the same thing, basically, and then she'll beat Serena Williams.
Charlie doesn't know anything. No, he knows.
But that stuck with me.
Charlie has had a squeaky bum for days since he was the first guy to pull the trigger on Federer and Nadal a few days ago.
Oh, yeah.
The first guy to tempt the jinx, and I'm telling you, he's been sweaty ever since.
Yeah, we watched the last set of Nadal Quarry, then he was like, yes.
Has he retweeted himself yet? Because I would have done.
There was about, how long do we think there was? 18 hours between Simon Briggs predicting Conta to win the title and Conta losing in the quarterfinals. Maybe even less than 18 hours.
Luckily, Simon gets everything else right, so that's fine. Okay. All right, Molly. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This has been great.
It's been lovely. Yeah. Here on the Tennis Podcast. Matt, thank you.
Thank you,
Catherine,
David.
Thank you.
Babos Mladenovic, Shea Stritsova, that's one semi-final. Dabrowski, Zhu, Krejcikova, Siniakova, that's the other semi-final. Those are the top four seeds in the women's doubles.
Catherine, on it here on the Tennis Podcast.
Couldn't have left you hanging with that one.
Thanks for that. We'll be back with another one of these tomorrow. Hopefully, cross everything, listeners, cross everything, that Mary Carrillo will be with us. She said she will. And we're going to get the beers in for Mary, because she's decided she wants to take me on in a beer off, which is a bit scary for me. But anyway, I'm up for it.
Who's losing that?
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm going to put some training in tonight. And we'll be back with another Tennis Podcast tomorrow. Tell everybody you know. There's loads of you listening to this. You've all got friends. You've all got family. Most of them must like tennis. And just tell them about the Tennis Podcast. They've all got phones. They can download this. You can subscribe to it for them. Just do it yourself. Don't leave it to them. You know, we need more listeners. So it's up to you, listeners. All right? I'm leaving that in your hands. We are executive produced by tennisballs.com, produced in association with Molly's Telegraph, of course. Our executive... I've done the old executive producer, because that's not Rio with a Y. Rio with a Y is our mascot, and we'll be back with another one of these tomorrow. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.